Welcome back, everybody. Today's episode is part two of sort of the history of the Pervert Workout with our founder, Matt Hedman. These are some cool interviews we got into about 5 years ago with Matt and Jordan Thompson. If you didn't get a chance to check out the first episode, you're going to want to go back to last week's newsletter and podcast and review that. This one is really cool because he dives a lot deeper into his personal experience of losing 50 pounds and really setting himself up for success for life. I really hope you enjoy it. Happy holidays, and we'll see you in 2026. Welcome to the Pervert Workout Podcast, where fitness meets simplicity. I'm Kyle Recchia, CEO of the Pervert Workout. We hope you enjoyed today's episode.
Matt, last time we spoke, we talked in depth about your story, how the Pervert Workout got started, and heard some really great personal stories and experiences you've had with slow motion strength training. So for anybody who might be listening to this before you've heard our part one of this series, do yourself a favor and go back and listen to the story where Matt was literally brought to his knees during a workout and had to crawl to the next exercise. That might be my new absolute favorite story, Matt, by the way.
By the way, if any clients are listening to this, that is not a normal experience for people to go through. So yeah. No one should get too worried about that. So
that is not recommended, but it is entertaining for sure.
It is entertaining. There you go. That's good to make that.
But today we're going to get into the meat of our method and talk about how impactful slow motion strength training really is. But before we do that, I will have a couple of quick fire questions for you. What is your favorite, absolute favorite slow motion strength training exercise?
I think I'm going to say the lat pull down exercise. I'm assuming this shows up on the video here. It's this one right behind me in my sort of virtual screen here behind me. And that particular version machine we have at almost every one of our studios. And it's my favorite lat pull down machine that I've ever used. It's beautiful as far as the way that the handles track. So that's one piece why I like that particular machine. But also it happens to be one exercise where I'm pretty strong, I guess would be the right way of putting it.
That always makes us feel good, right?
Oh, right, yeah. So that's probably why I like it also, yeah.
And the lat pull down, I always think of it as the leg press of the upper body. Because it works so many different muscle groups. Can you remind us which ones they work?
Well, yeah. So people oftentimes think of the latissimus dorsi. It's called lat pull down because the latissimus dorsi muscle, these, if you see a bodybuilder like in a picture and they have a V-shaped upper body, the latissimus dorsi, which are sticking out from their sides, which to like a normal person might look really weird. And those are, you know, some of it's not the biggest muscle group in the upper body, depending on how you're calculating it. And so that's definitely a prime mover. And then the other prime mover is actually in your biceps because you're bringing your I can't remember if it's called shoulder flexion or shoulder extension, but it's elbow flexion right here, which your biceps are doing. So those would be the prime movers. Having said that, you know, believe it or not, your chest is involved in this. It's a climbing muscle and it's actually helping pull your arm down when you're doing it. And of course, your abs are definitely involved in this too. Like sometimes people will get sore, especially if they haven't done this exercise before. And certainly your forearms because you're gripping. You can make a small argument that the triceps might be used a little bit because one of the heads of the triceps crosses the shoulder and is involved in moving this way. And it uses, you know, at least the rear part of the deltoids. So you've got a pretty good argument that it's at least to some degree hitting the vast majority of the muscles in the upper body, you know. I'm not saying if it hits them all, you know, optimally, but almost all of them are involved to some degree. So yeah, it's a good kind of upper body squat, so to speak.
And just for my own personal curiosity, how much are you pulling on the lat pull down these days?
Well, my most recent workout where I did the lat pull down, I was using, I think it was in like 290 something pounds, if I remember correctly. It might have been 295. Could that be right? Yeah, I think it was 295.
Is that the full Wade stack? I don't remember.
Well, it's kind of funny. The on most of our lap pull down machines, it's the full weight stack plus, because the full weight stack is 245 pounds, and so it's the full weight stack plus 50 more pounds. And so I, you know, added some extra, you know, weight plates on top of it, and then also pinned in another 25-pound plate to get 50 extra pounds on there. And so, like I said, it's one of the exercises where I'm stronger on. Like you said, it makes me feel good because I'm stronger on that one. And yeah.
Okay, so which is your absolute least favorite exercise?
A lot of people would disagree with this, and I'm totally fine with that. But for me, it would definitely be abdominal. So I personally hate doing abdominal exercises. And it's not just because, you know, they hurt, which they do. But, you know, lots of people like abdominal exercises for reasons which actually aren't happening on the exercises. They think it's going to do something which it's not going to do at all. And so, like, for example, a lot of people will think it will make their abs look better. And it can if a person is lean enough. As if you have a small enough layer of fat which are over your abdominal muscles, then the Dell machine can make those muscles a little bit larger, and so kind of stick through the fat just a little bit more, because we all have at least a little bit there. And so but for unless the person already has relatively low body fat, it won't do that, and it won't, try to think the right way of putting it, and it's definitely not the, like, let's say if someone has an average or more level of body fat, it's not the exercise which is going to get you to abs faster than other exercises. I make the argument that the leg press or variation of squat or some lower body exercise which is heavily using the quadriceps and gluteus maximus muscles, which are the biggest muscles in the lower body, and making the biggest impact on adding lean muscle to your body, is going to have the biggest impact that strength training can have on the person's metabolism, and therefore the biggest contribution that an exercise program can make, or certainly a strength training program can make, towards fat loss. And so it was quite a few years ago, I wrote an article. It might have even been before you actually were involved. You've been with our company for a while, but this one would have been back in maybe even 2010 when I might have written this article. The title was something like the best exercise for your abs, and my answer for that was the leg press, because of what I just said. It has out of the exercise which we normally do with clients, has the biggest effect on the metabolism and the biggest effect on fat loss, so therefore the biggest effect on losing fat on anywhere in your body, including on your abdominals. And so there's that. And so yeah, and so then, so what the abdominal exercise actually does is it you know, makes your abdominals a little bit bigger, which again, if you're lean, it'll make your definition there better. But for folks which aren't lean enough, it'll just make those muscles a little bigger. And so I used to talk with, like, this is many years ago, this definitely predates 2010, when I was training clients, and I used to spend a lot of time trying to talk about what I just said and try to convince them that, you know, let's not do abdominal exercises as part of your routine, because it's not going to do what you're thinking it's going to do. And I would get through this, you know, long explanation, longer than what I even did right here. And at the end, often that my client would say, okay, well, what's the best abdominal exercise? And again, just people naturally want to feel the burn in those muscles, because it's an area that they want to make look better. And so I finally acquiesced in most clients we would include those exercises, because it doesn't hurt anything, you know, and it makes those muscles stronger and, you know, firmer and all that kind of stuff underneath whatever fat is there. And, but for me personally, since I sort of know too much, I guess at least related to that, and it burns so much for not a whole lot of good, at least for what I'm going after. That's my least favorite.
But having a strong core, having strong abdominals, there are many, many benefits to that, that I think a lot of our clientele, could reap the benefits of, including posture and helping with low back pain and a number of things.
I agree. And I almost never do direct abdominal exercises myself. And but I do indirect ones. Even we talked about the lat pull down, that indirectly involves the abdominals. And so they're not neglected in a sense. And so when I, in the very rare occasion where I do get into an abdominal machine, I'm actually pretty strong on it, you know. And so, in other words, you don't have to do an abdominal exercise to, you know, to get and keep those muscles strong. And again, if there's, it's not necessarily anything wrong with it. And again, most people want to do it, and I'm 100%, you know, for it. I just, for me personally, that's my least favorite.
So let's pretend I've never been through a slow motion strength training workout, which we know is not true, having been with the company for a long time. But can you walk me through a slow motion strength training exercise? What are some of the most important things to know while doing it? Let's go with the leg press. You know, I think that's a great teaching exercise and one that a lot of people can probably wrap their brains around.
I'm going to have a client sit down on the leg press, and assume they already know how to do it, we'd want to have them as slow as they can without stopping, start pressing the foot pedal forward. And it's okay on that first repetition if it takes possibly even several seconds to gradually build up force against the foot pedal till you're pressing just barely more than it takes to just hold it there, and so it starts moving slowly. And so I think it's I want to say, I'm not sure if it's in Fred Hahn's Silver and Fitness Revolution book, or if I just heard him talk about this, or their studios at least used to do this, if they don't still, is, you know, try it for the first inch of the range of motion, trying to take you know, 2 or 3 seconds to do that first inch. There's being extra slow, you know, in the beginning, because that's one, you know, kind of one common sort of form discrepancy is to fire out of the start of a repetition. And so that's how you want to do, is being, if, you know, super slow throughout the repetition, but especially, you know, the first part of each repetition, including the first repetition itself. And then you'd be going about it. So once you got that just barely started moving, then you would keep going as slowly as you can without stopping, which on most exercises, including the leg press, is about 10 seconds. And then on the leg press, it's an exercise where as your legs start to extend and they get closer to where your knees are getting closer to being straightened, the resistance for the muscles involved, the weight is the same that you're using, but because of leverages in the bones as they're changing angles, gets not as hard for the muscles to do. And so we're going to want to have you turn around before your legs straighten all the way without stopping. So it was without resting, you know, at that most extended position, and take another 10 seconds to come back. So about as slowly as you did on the way out. And then you want to come down, and as you're nearing the bottom, you want to even try to slow down even a little bit more than you've already been going slow, and just ideally, you know, barely touching the weight stack. And then again, just trying to take another 2 or 3 seconds for that first inch on the next repetition, and another as slow as you can go, 10 seconds the way out, until you get to, you know, the extended position where your legs are still bent, but getting closer to straight, and then taking 10 seconds back. And so repeating that process for, in most cases, several repetitions. And as you do each subsequent repetition, usually it'll become harder as your muscles start to fatigue. And then each one gets harder and harder and harder still, until if you learn how to do this well, you'll get to a repetition where it takes almost all of your effort, or maybe even all of your effort, just to get it to move and complete a repetition. Like let's say 5 repetitions in, or however many repetitions it takes to get to that point, and you can barely complete it, and then you get to where, you know, you turn around and start coming back, and it's probably really hard to lower it slowly. And you want to still try to do the best you can to take a full 10 seconds on the way down, and then come down and barely touch, and then barely start. And then if that most recent one, you had to push as hard as you could to finish it or close to it, there's a good chance that next repetition, you'll need to push as hard as you can too. But this one, might not actually move. Like you might get a little ways, it might stop moving, or it might not even be able to move it out of the start. And so you want to, and so you'll get to the point where you're pushing as hard as you can, trying at this point now, not to go slow anymore, but trying to go as fast as possible, and it's not moving at all. So you're recruiting all the muscles which you possibly can, like in those muscle groups for that exercise, you know, so slow twitch, fast twitch, everything is being recruited to try to move, and no movement is happening. And once you get to that point where you're pushing as hard as you can, but don't do more, then that's okay. Push as hard as you can, but no movement is possible. That's when you want to go ahead and slowly back off and rest. And so, but you want to make sure that you're there. Like, so for example, you know, sometimes it's easy to misjudge this. Like it might feel really hard on one repetition and, you know, felt like almost pushing almost as hard as you could. You come down like, oh, there's no way I'm going to get another one. And you think you won't be able to get the next one, but sometimes you can get the next one, you know, so you have to try as hard as you can. And so that's why even pushing for a couple or several seconds after it stops moving, just to make sure you can't move or can be a good idea. I guess I would word it that way. And so then as far as, and then you want to, wherever you hit that, what I call muscle, I used to call it, I mean, even sometimes I still do, but I used to call it muscle failure, because you're getting the muscles so fatigued that they can't move the resistance anymore. So that's where the term, you know, came from, muscle failure. Having said that, I found a lot of clients get discouraged by that. They feel like, oh, I failed. Like, you know, I want to say, it's actually a success. You know, you actually fatigue your muscles down to the point to stimulate them to change. I wasn't the person who coined this, but we've tried to adopt, and I'm not sure how widespread it is in our company, but calling that muscle success, because that fatiguing down to that point is success. So anyway, if you hit that somewhere halfway through, then you want to make sure you're careful setting it down too. In other words, not just, you know, dropping the weight. And so once you hit that, achieve the fatigue of muscle success, then you've done as much as you can to stimulate the muscles to get stronger and stimulate the muscles to, you know, when they're able to recover, to be able to add more lean muscle tissue to your body and do all the wonderful things that strength training exercise can do. So, I'll add one other. Well, I'll just add one other sort of just clarification here too. Cause so that's the leg press. The leg press is an exercise where, you know, in the fully finished position, that the bones could actually straighten all the way, you know, and your knees could straighten all the way. And so you don't want to straighten all the way right there. And that's why you turn around about stopping on that exercise. And the chest press is similar. You don't want to stop out there and turn around before the elbows straighten all the way. But a lot of exercises, like let's say that lat pull down that we discussed earlier, you'll come down and in the fully contracted position at the bottom of the lat pull down exercise, there's still a lot of, you're not resting, there's still a lot of force that you have to use to hold yourself there. And on exercises like that, you can, or even the abdominal exercise, then we'll often people pause or even squeeze, try to go even further on those exercises because there's still resistance in the most contracted position. So the leg press is a little different, where there's not much resistance in the most contracted position, and we even kind of avoid getting all the way to the most contracted position.
There's a lot to know and a lot to remember there. And there's one piece that you touched on is misjudging whether or not you've hit muscle success. And that's very easy to do, especially, you know, when you are in that machine and it's burning and you're giving your effort. And I have found for myself and probably 98% of the people that I have trained over the years, that that's where having a trainer right there is so valuable and so crucial, so that you're not leaving it all on the table, because hitting that muscle success is the ultimate goal.
No, I agree. And it's, I would say, in my experience, I've trained at least hundreds, if not thousands of clients over the years. It might even be most clients have trouble identifying, you know, that they're there. So think as they've fatigued as deep as they can, when they still might be able to, you know, finish a whole other one or more repetitions. So, to me, like what I just described to you, you know, to me, it seems like it makes like it's that you'll be understandable what I'm discussing, but maybe it's just because it gets so hard that maybe that's where the confusion comes in. It's easy to misjudge, I guess.
Yeah. And easy to doubt our own abilities. One of the most common things that I've heard from clients over the years is my trainer pushes me safely, you know, to where I never thought that I would ever be able to go, meaning like beyond what I thought I was capable of doing.
Yeah.
So again, that's just one of the amazing things about having a coach right there, just telling you, well, got a little bit more in you. Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned a couple minutes ago, all the wonderful things that slow motion strength training does for us, you know, our bodies, our overall health. And we could probably talk for hours about the just laundry list of benefits from slow motion strength training. But I'd like to dive into ones that people should absolutely know that by doing slow motion strength training, they can reap some of these benefits. And I think the most obvious one, you know, we're talking about lifting weights and strength training, is gaining muscle and gaining strength. That is likely the first benefit people experience once they implement this into their routine, if you will. What's actually happening when we hit muscle success that is causing our strength and our muscles to grow so effectively, so efficiently?
It's not well known enough to where, because I've even about a year ago, I asked this really bright, you know, professor of exercise physiology, essentially the question of like, what exactly is the stimulus? What actually is happening inside the muscles? Is it this or this or this? And he said, no, it's not, you know, I can't remember. It's like, no, it's not muscle damage because of blah, blah, blah. And it's not this and this. And long story short is, you know, he didn't know. and so if it was clear as far as the actual, you know, biological thing, which is happening, whether it's a certain chemical or a certain thing getting stretched or this or that, it's not well known. It's like, I'm not saying that nobody in the world knows, but if they do, maybe they're keeping it a secret to themselves right now. From what we can tell, you know, that lifting weights, at least in certain ways, helps people, you know, get stronger and also add lean muscle tissue to their bodies, which is helpful in a number of different ways. And you know, there's different theories on sort of what's happening. Like I said, muscle damage is one of those theories, for example. And who knows, that might even be what it is. It's just, you know, there's certainly far from consensus. In the theory of high intensity strength training, which slow motion strength training is kind of falls under that general umbrella, this issue of momentary fatigue in the muscles appears to be really important. And so if you fatigue down, if you fatigue your muscles down to that point of muscle success, and you get to the point where you're actually pushing, or depending on it, sometimes on the exercise you're pulling, as hard as you can, and it's not moving, you know, the process from starting and getting all the way up to that that point, you've basically recruited all the different muscle fibers that are available to try to get, to try to make it into to that you can use, and you know, if you do it well, presumably gotten as much of a stimulus as you can for stimulating the muscles to get stronger and to add more lean muscle tissue to the body. It's called, I might be getting the name wrong, but it's Heinemann's principle, I think, is a size principle. And it has to do with the motor units of muscle fibers as far as when they're recruited in a particular movement. And when the load is not very demanding, like maybe let's say the first repetition on a given exercise might not be as demanding, certainly not as the last ones, then it's going to, you know, tend to use muscle fibers which are, you know, use the term slower twitch or oxidative muscle fibers. And as it gets more demanding, then other muscle groups of muscle fibers are coming to play to be able to just continue moving it successfully. And as you fatigue, the exercise gets more demanding. And so when you get to the end, you're pulling in everything, like the fast twitch, which are the glycolytic muscle fibers, and so So that, you know, the fatigue is important, and that's one reason why you don't want to stop before you hit that muscle success point, because you don't want to, you know, especially if you got 90% of the way there, you might be still leaving some stimulus on the table if you quit at that point. I mean, we don't really know that for sure, but it's just you've done as much as you can if you get to your within the set at least for stimulating muscles get stronger and add more lean muscle tissue to the body.
Why is it so important for you, me, and everybody else to continue to add lean muscle tissue to the body?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer can be different for different people and where they're at in their lives and their age and what they're interested in. And so, for example, and again, I'm not a typical client of our company, but when I started, I was a 20-year-old male who just, you know, when I started slow motion strength training, I was already someone who'd been lifting weights in different ways for 10 years prior to that. And I just wanted to, you know, try to build muscles as big as my genetics, like my genetic response to exercise would allow, which that's also something important to understand as well, is that there's significant variation in how a person's responsiveness to how much muscle they can add to their bodies. So if people are worried about looking like a bodybuilder from strength training, in well over 99% of the cases, it's nothing to worry about. And even in the, you know, 0.001% or whatever, where it is something to worry about, it's an easy problem to fix if you ever get to be too muscular. But that might even be beyond the scope of this discussion. So there's that. But then if you also look at, as people start to age, you know, I was 20 years old at that point, but if people start to age, there's something called age-related sarcopenia. And sarco, if I'm getting my terminology right, is muscle, and penia is you know, shrinking or loss of. It's basically, you know, loss of muscle and tissue. And I've seen different literature as far as the starting point. I've seen it some literature talking about it starting as early as age 25, and other literature talking about it starting at age 40. But the bottom line is, at some point, you know, into adulthood, if a person doesn't do effective strength training, then they start to gradually lose muscle tissue. And some of the research I said is, as you know, as we get into our 50s, 60s, and 70s, the rate can get faster. You know, at least some of the literature that I've seen is as far as the muscle loss, and so that's problematic for a number of reasons, including getting weaker as you get older. And even having having the bones getting more frail, like, you know, osteopenia or osteoporosis, because then your muscles aren't strong enough to push against heavier loads, and you know, having to use walkers and a hard time getting out of a chair and using canes and a number of other things which can be very problematic from getting too weak. So that's certainly something that almost all of us, you know, probably want to avoid, if not all of us. And so there's that. But then on the other side of the spectrum is people as they age, mostly, at least in our society currently, you know, as they get into their 40s, 50s, 60s, they're usually not, you know, getting smaller, like losing muscle and getting smaller. People oftentimes are getting bigger. And so the question is, well, wait, what's going on there? I thought you just said that people lose muscle as you get older, which, again, if we're not doing effective strength training, that's what happens on average to people. I wouldn't say, well, not to say that this is the only problem, or even that it's the primary cause of this in our society, but it is at least a contributor, is that, you know, muscle tissue is one, you know, biologically active, and it does, long story short, is the more muscles, you know, muscle tissue you have in your body, the more calories your body has to use just to maintain it and, you know, keep it alive, so to speak. And so everything else being equal, if you have less muscle tissue, you know, shrinking over time, then your metabolism is also shrinking. And one reason their metabolism goes down as people age is because of that sarcopenia. And so then you have people getting not only less muscle, but oftentimes more fat as they get older. And so if you look at somebody who's middle-aged or older, and if they're, if you, you know, if they're too heavy, it might be sort of counterintuitive. Like, well, strength training wouldn't be the answer for that, would it? They're already too heavy. We don't want to get them bigger. Well, what's interesting is because of age-related sarcopenia, to get them back to where they were at age 25, part of the solution is adding back lost muscle tissue. It's not the only thing a person would do, because then there's also nutritional considerations, which are even more influential for fat loss. But it's part of the problem, and not just for the metabolism, but even having yourself look good, you know, after you lose fat too. Because those are some reasons off the top of my head. I'm probably missing one or a few gigantic ones as far as why muscle tissue is important, but just off the top of my head, though.
No, I think you touched on some really important ones. The biggest one being that, you know, it's inevitable if we're not actively strengthening our muscles, so we are losing them. But you kind of started to transition into another huge benefit. And I think sometimes a lot of people are skeptical that they can lose fat simply by adopting a strength training routine and, of course, partnered with proper nutrition. And so you touched on that mostly. Is there anything else that you would add to that? How somebody can lose fat by doing this?
Yes, actually, that I can add more color to that. And I'll start actually just by telling another story from my own experience. So I can't remember if I actually mentioned this, what I'm about ready to say, in our last conversation or not. But even if I did, it bears repeating. I feel like I've made, let's put it this way, I've made a lot of mistakes in exercise, strength training, and nutrition over the years. I mean, I've been in like a nut about just extremely interested in this stuff ever since age 10, and I've just made a ton of mistakes over the years. And we talked about some of those, in our last discussion. But one thing which I don't think I mentioned there in our last conversation is there was one brief period of time in early adulthood where I was had 50 pounds more fat on my body than I do right now. And so one of the mistakes that I made, so this would have been back in the early 90s. And I, among other things, I was, reading the muscle, this is back when I was, basically a young kid just wanting to build bigger muscles. And so I would read the bodybuilding magazines and you would, after reading all those, you'd sort of get the impression that, you do need to do strength training, but in order to get really muscular, you have to eat a lot too. And if you're not making gains, you're probably under eating, And so long story short, I made the mistake of basically force feeding myself excess calories, thinking it was going to help me get more muscular, and which is, it sounds humorous in hindsight. But it was a mistake that I made, and I got to the point where I was literally carrying 50 pounds more fat on me than I do today. And so I have personal experience with this in that, I went through the fat loss process, and so trying to think of the right way of putting it. And as far as exercise goes, I mean, these days strength training is all that I do for, it's been decades since I've done running, in the name of exercise, for example. And I've been able to maintain, the fat loss that I achieved. So, doing, so-called aerobics or so-called cardio exercises like, walking or jogging or bicycling or spinning or, swimming or that kind of stuff, they are not necessary for fat loss and to lose fat or to keep it off. And so if you don't want to do them, you don't have to. And like for me, most people in our culture, certainly myself included, are busy enough to, I'm not looking for stuff just to fill my time, which isn't gonna actually add much. And so I don't, that's one of the reasons why I don't do them. And I can't remember if we discussed the comparison in Ellington Darden's book, Living Longer, Stronger, which he talked about. I think I saw it actually the table in the, or maybe that was in a different post that we have on our website. It might've been on the science behind slow motion strength training. But anyway, so Ellington Darden is used to be years ago, the director of research at the Nautilus company that makes Nautilus machines, which is most machines we have at our studios. And, um, He's got a PhD behind his name and written, I think, around 50 books on strength training, fitness, and nutrition. And as I mentioned, our last conversation was one of his books, which got me started on, you know, in slow motion strength training. But he had one of his other books, Living Longer, Stronger. He was comparing some fat loss results between one of his research groups with a couple of groups that Wayne Westcott had run. And Wayne Westcott's another guy from the high intensity realm that's done a lot of great research and super nice guy as well. And what was interesting about the comparison, it's not a perfect comparison because one of the groups was supervised, by Darden, and the other two were, you know, under Wayne's, supervision. So it's not a perfect comparison, but what's interesting is all three of the groups were eating the same diet plan, or at least attempting to eat the same diet plan. And one of Westcott's group was doing, a so-called aerobics only, so low intensity exercise only, plus the Nautilus diet was the diet plan that they were on. And I think it averaged, I might get these wrong, but it averaged, the Nautilus diet was, I don't know if it was 1800 calories a day for males and 12 or 1500 calories a day for females. And so one of Westcott's group was doing that diet. And then aerobics only. He had another group, which was doing the diet plus aerobics and high intensity strength training. And then Darden's group that he did was doing strength training only. And I believe it was an 8-week time frame that the comparison went over, and all three groups lost fat, and both, I think, if I remember correctly, both of I think the smallest amount of fat loss was Westcott's aerobics only group, and they also lost muscle, if I remember correctly. And by the way, you might remember this better than I do, so feel free to jump in and correct me on the number. And it's interesting that the strength training, this aerobics plus strength training, Westcott's other group got better fat loss results. And instead of losing muscle, they actually gained a couple pounds of muscle during the 8 weeks as well. What's really interesting is Darden's group of strength training only, I think it was 18 pounds of fat loss over 8 weeks, which was almost twice as much fat loss as either of the other two groups got. I think it was 10 pounds of fat loss was approximately the highest average of between those two groups. And so the average in Darden's group was 18 pounds of fat loss, if I remember correctly. And it had slightly more muscle gain than strength training plus aerobics group. So it seems counterintuitive, but, it is possible to lose significant fat and lose it fast doing just strength training for exercise. The reason why is because effective nutrition is a much, much more influential lever to pull than exercise, including strength training. But if a person's got to do exercise, they want to do strength training. They should want to do strength training because it's going to give you the certainly the most bang for your buck, and in my opinion, the best compared to low intensity exercises like walking and jogging and all that kind of stuff. But there was one other thing that I was going to say about this. Yeah. So that and that's I'm sorry I'm taking a while to talk about this here, but that's just the amounts. There's other things which strength training can do during the fat loss process as well, including helping with what's called discriminated weight loss. In other words, that when a person wants to lose weight, usually they don't want to just lose weight. Period. They want to lose fat, and like we saw in Darden's aerobics only study, a reduced calorie diet plus no strength training, just aerobics, resulted in fat loss. And that's what's going to happen. Usually someone's not doing strength training. And so if you do effective strength training, you do as much as you can to keep your muscle and hopefully add some lean muscle tissue during the process. And that's going to help you look better, obviously feel better too, but look better and help with keeping your metabolism. And there are several other factors which might be beyond the scope of this discussion as far as how strength training is a good thing to do during a fat loss process. But it's really, if I had to do it all over again, I would do effective nutrition, number one, and number two, effective slow motion, high intensity strength training. And those are the those are the two big levers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Perfect Workout Podcast. We hope you found today's episode inspiring and actionable. If you're ready to take the next step in your fitness journey, visit us at theperfectworkout.com for more resources or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share this episode with someone who could benefit. Together, let's make fitness simple, empowering, and a part of life well lived. See you next time.